This is Mame Warren. Today is the 8th of October, 1996. I'm with Jerry Lenfest. And where are we exactly?
In Huntington Valley.
That's what I thought. Okay.
H-U-N-T-I-G-D-O-N Valley.
Okay. Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
All right.
Outside of Philadelphia.
Okay. So, I want to go all the way back to the beginnings of your association with Washington and Lee. Why did you go to Washington and Lee in the first place?
I had, Dean Gillum had come to Mercersburg Academy and interviewed students, and I was one of the students he interviewed. And I applied to Washington Lee really on the basis of Dean Gillum. He was a man that was very warm, very likable, and you couldn't be around him very long without being attracted to him, and you thought the institution had anything like Dean Gillum, it would be a place you would like to go. My father was an engineer. He was education, naval architecture, marine engineering, but he was an engineering type of person. And he said, Jerry, he said, you're a senior at Mercersburg. What would you like to do in college? I said, I didn't know. And he said, well, I'll be damned if I'm going to spend all that money and send you to college if you don't know what you want to be. So actually, I went to see, upon graduation from Mercersburg, not expecting to go to college. But I had been accepted to Washington and Lee before I left to go to sea. And my father relented in my absence. We had pulled into Philadelphia on this ship, and he came aboard and rather sheepishly said, do you still want to go to college? I said, yes. And he said, well, I've enrolled you at Washington and Lee. Evidently called Dean Gillum and had me enroll without my knowledge. So I arrived in Lexington a month late. School had already started and could not join in the freshman indoctrination, but I was overjoyed to be going to college. And that's how I went to Washington and Lee.
So you arrived sort of sight unseen. You'd never been to Lexington before?
I'd never been there, and I actually arrived a month late.
Do you remember what your first impressions are when you arrived?
You know, WNL is a small school now, but it seemed even smaller then. There was a certain camaraderie because you had a very small incoming class. And I think the first impression coming into WNL was your classmates and, you know, the first impression and interest you had as the people you'd be going through 4 years together. And the other was, you know, what the nature of the campus and the other students on campus. And it had a certain smallness and intimacy that was attractive to me. When you first go to college, you're on the way to find out, I guess, primarily about yourself and what you're going to be. And WNL was the kind of school that let you find yourself.
Was it any kind of problem that you arrived a month late?
No, it wasn't that hard to catch up.
And you missed all of freshman camp, too, then.
Yeah, I missed meeting a lot of the incoming class during the freshman camp, but I've always liked people, and it wasn't hard to catch up.
But I bet they got a beanie out for you anyway.
As I recall, yes. Yes.
Did you expect that?
No, but, you know, you easily adapt because the customs are the ones you have to adhere to. You don't make them. They're made for you.
And there are a lot of customs in Washington and Lee.
There are. You've interviewed a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Through the years, the customs change. But it seems as though people assume that whatever they had was what the customs were. You know? So what do you remember about the customs when you arrived?
I remember the strong fraternity orientation and the excitement of Rush Week and going to all the different fraternities and meeting you know, the members of each fraternity and those we had good chemistry and those that you didn't. And, you know, to me that was very different because I hadn't really had any experience or knowledge through older brothers or otherwise with fraternities. So that was very interesting and very different.
So did you pledge?
I pledged Sigma Chi fraternity, where I had good chemistry with the, you know, the people that interviewed me.
Was your fraternity important to you?
It's not, you know, I could care less about being a member of a national fraternity, but the experience of going through college and the intimacy of being in a smaller group, even though Washington is a relatively small college, I think there's a richness in going through the college experience in a small group of people. You had an affinity, you know, shared meals together and were fraternity brothers, and I think that was a very important part of the experience at Washington Lee. Not because of the national fraternity, but being in a group of students in a smaller group within the university. And I think that was part of the richness of the W&L experience.
Did you live at the fraternity house?
No, I never lived there.
Oh, where did you live?
We got 1, 2, 3 different apartments during my years at W&L. One was very close to the Sigma Chi house, and the other two were more remote.
And where's the Sigma Chi house? And we're talking 1949 here?
It's the closest fraternity to the campus, actually. It's right across from the church. I think it's Lee Avenue.
Oh, okay. But it's, that building is no longer
a fraternity. It's no longer a fraternity. There's now a new Sigma Chi house.
Yes,
which
okay.
Which is in the other part of town, other side of town.
Okay. All right. Oh, I know that building well. Okay. Oh, well, that was a very convenient location.
It was too convenient.
You chose well.
We were under the eye of the university more than the others were. So.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, we were closer geographically. Uh-huh. You know, physically, we were right there. It was hard to raise too much hell without everybody, you know, knowing it.
Well, now, how would you raise hell? I can't imagine Washington and Lee boys raising hell.
We were always gentlemen.
What does it mean for Washington and Lee students to raise hell in your day?
Well, I guess probably the inherent problem we all have is that sometimes we drank too much and would raise a little hell. But I don't recall, you know, anything that was really destructive or truly mean in that sense. In other words, if we raised hell, it was really just having a good time.
Now, one thing I'm curious about, I'm real interested that you arrived a month late. You're the first person I've talked to who's had that experience.
I came down by train, and my mother died when I was 13, so my father ran his own business and then remarried in 1948, but they did not come down. I came down by myself.
So you arrived all the way into Lexington on the train? The train was still
coming? As I recall, I came down to Buena Vista, and then you had to... I've forgotten how I got over to Lexington. Don't recall. But as I recall, it was... I forget they had a name for it, but it came down to Buena Vista.
Okay, we'll pause. So you arrived a month late. How did you find out about the honor system? Because that's normally explained during freshman camp.
you know, it's so much a part of the life of the campus that it was easy to adapt, you know, to it anyway. I don't recall ever having any formal lecture about the honor system, but it was something that, you know, that you easily learned about and followed.
Did it have a strong impression on you? Were there any instances where you saw it being challenged?
No. I was fortunate in that I never had to turn anybody in that I saw cheating. And I think really the instances of any cheating had have been extremely rare. I think, you know, that would have been the biggest problem for me if I had found anybody that actually cheated and I had to turn them in. Although I recognize that that's a very strong part of the honor system. But I remember I took my last year in law school, and I stayed up studying the night before so late that I was feeling a little dizzy. So I took off, went down to my apartment and took a swig of whiskey, and then came back and finished the exam. I mean, where else could you do that? And by the way, I was in property with Dean Williams. I got an A on the exam. But, you know, there's an example of, and it's a very prideful experience. I mean, you feel that people trust you and you want to honor that trust.
Were there particular members of the faculty who made a difference to you?
There were two. I recall both taught history. Terrible with names or anything. He was physically handicapped, was one. And the other, you live in Lexington?
Mm-hmm.
He was a wonderful gentleman, just died a year or 2 years ago.
Bill Pusey?
No, it was another. He was just wonderful, wonderful person. He came from something Neck, Virginia, Northern Neck of Virginia, very remote area down towards the Chesapeake, Northern Neck. Griffith.
Oh, didn't know him. And he taught history?
I recall he taught history, and he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
What made him such a good teacher?
He's a man of great personal integrity, who had very good judgment, logic, in the way he taught. You know, sometimes we find people that share our own feelings. That's why we think they're good teachers, and he was particularly good. He had a wonderful humility. He was not a braggart or ego-driven. He was just a very simple man and very intelligent to be simple. In other words, a lot of people that lack intelligence could be very complex. He was a man that thought through who he was and what he was, and he had a wonderful sense of judgment and integrity. I liked him very much. Anybody else?
Would you socialize with your teacher?
No.
No?
No. No. It was sort of a familiarity breeds contempt. So, you know, I didn't find myself too close to the teachers, professors.
Mm-hmm. What was your major? Economics?
Economics.
Yeah. Economics.
Griffith taught economics.
He taught economics?
Yeah.
Okay.
He just died a year or two ago, 2 years ago, I think. Maybe three. Wonderful man.
So was it a good department at that time?
I thought it was excellent. You learn that nobody really knows about economics. It's sort of the Socratic method. That you have to take one side or the other. I found the comparative economic systems was very interesting. The difference between communism, socialism, capitalism. And how many times the same principles can blend. If you look at our depression, I mean, there's socialism aspects to recovery measures that were taken.
And I also understand you played soccer.
I did.
I have not talked to anybody who played soccer. And you know, they just had the 50th reunion at the beginning of soccer.
I know. I was very tempted to go.
Well, you should have. You should have. It looked like it was a great weekend. There was all kinds of stuff going on campus.
Maybe we met a lot of friends. Carl Rump, who was classmate and played, was a great goalie. He was all Southern. It was my roommate, Washington. We were going to go down together, but things got caught up and we couldn't make it.
So tell me about playing soccer.
Well, before I went to Mercersburg Academy, we lived on a farm. And my father's away traveling, my mother was dead, and I lived there with a Pennsylvania Dutch housekeeper, very serious, read her Bible every night, wore a little cap in the back of her head like a yarmulke, and she wasn't Mennonite, she was what they call plain people. And so anyway, I had to walk a mile of the bus in this dirt road. And sometimes I'd miss the bus or I wouldn't try to make it. So my father figured he would send me to Mercersburg. But because we were so far away from high school, I never played any sport. And at Mercersburg, I learned to play soccer. And it was the first real sport that I had played at the high school level. You know, as a kid, I grew up playing baseball and football and other things, but in high school, I couldn't take any of those sports because if I missed the bus, I had no way of getting home. So I started playing at Mercersburg, and then when we went to Washington, I continued playing. It was a great amount of fun and excitement to me, you know, to play. We had a great group of guys. We'd go to different campuses like University of Virginia and Duke and University of North Carolina and playing. It was just great fun, so I enjoyed it very much. We had a great group.
And you had one particularly good season, I think, right?
I'm not sure we were the best team around. We had our share of wins and certainly our share of losses, but the main thing is we had a good time playing. And I remember, you know, people like Dick Pizitz from Atlanta and Carl Rump, my roommate, and many others that were, I'm sure, at that 50th reunion that we missed that I would have enjoyed seeing.
Now, who was your coach?
Norm Lord, it started with.
Ah, I talked to Norm.
He's been around.
In fact, as I went by, he lives in Newark, Delaware now, and as I drove by Newark, I said, "Hey, Norm, how you doing?"
And another great coach came after Norm Lord, and his name I've forgotten, but he was after Norm, and just really nice guy. Pfister, as I recall, but I'm not sure.
Do you have any memories of Norm in particular?
Norm hasn't changed. Norm, you know, is exciting and physical and robust and optimistic as he ever was. He'll never change.
I hope not.
No, he's wonderful.
I, at one point in my interview with him, I asked him something about the Washington and Lee swing, and he immediately burst into song. And you know how booming his voice was? I thought my ear was going to fall off.
Yeah, wonderful man.
Oh, he is. He's just charming. He's just charming. So, you played soccer, and what other things were you involved with?
Really, very much. By the way, you mentioned teachers. Dean Laybourne was important to me in one aspect. You know, we all loved him as a man, but during his philosophy course, he said, I want you to pick a philosopher that you like and write a paper on that philosopher. I don't think I ever really appreciated philosophy as much as trying to figure out which philosopher I like, because you dabble in this one and dabble in that one. And finally I found one that I liked that was not really that popular. He was different. And so I enjoyed that course also. What else did I do? I never really call of any great achievement or interest other than just the general experience of going 4 years at WNL.
You know, Laverne seems to have been an extraordinary human being. He seems to have touched so many lives.
Yes. Another great teacher who was very different yet wonderful was Dean Williams of the law school. As I mentioned, I spent the last year there. And he was a man, again, of great humility and yet great intelligence. He was almost deceptively intelligent. You didn't realize how intelligent he was until after you left his lecture and you began to think about what he was talking about and how well he had analyzed the principles of law that he was teaching.
So you just did 1 year of law school at Washington and Lee?
In those days, you could take a combination course instead of 4 years college and 3 years law school. You could spend the last year of college and law school, so it was six instead of seven. But when I graduated, I went in the Navy and got married while I was in the Navy, and Marguerite had a job teaching in New York, on Long Island. So I'd been accepted at WNL UVA in Columbia, and I picked Columbia because Marguerite had a job. I didn't have any money. So between the GI Bill and the Marguerite, you know, I went through law school.
Now, I read in one of the magazine articles about you that you used to hitchhike back and forth.
Yeah.
Is it Marguerite?
That's right.
I love that. That's great.
Up Route 11 in those days. And the dean of Wilson College, Dean Lysert, she'd been in the WACS, I think, in the Second World War. Whenever I hitchhike out of town, she'd give me a ride out of town.
That's great.
And I'm not sure what her motivation was, but she certainly helped me get out of Chambersburg.
But now, would Marguerite come and visit you?
Yes.
So does that mean you all went to fancy dress and the other dance?
We didn't go to fancy dress. I had a sort of economic problem, but went to some other parties. There was an event that was between the, I think it was Phi Delta and Beta and Sigma Chi were all formed on the same campus of a college in Ohio. I think they called it the Ohio Miami Triad. It was Miami University in Ohio. And that's when I had my first day with Marguerite. I invited her down for that party and series of parties and the weekend dance.
So they would have been parties at the fraternity house?
Well, actually, this one was held in Stanton.
Stanton.
There were parties in the fraternity houses, but the big event was in hotel in Stanton.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of
Miami Triad.
A Washington and Lee event up in Stanton.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they hold it down in Natural Bridge, but this was held in Stanton.
Oh. Well, that's... You're full of all
you
kinds of
something
quirks here,
all
really. Well, that's part of the fun of this job. I learn something every day. I learn lots of things every day. So you say you didn't go to fancy dress?
No, no. I didn't have a car, and I didn't go to fancy dress. My father, again, was a strict engineer that didn't believe in too much frivolity.
And yet, it seems like you were surrounded by a bunch of frivolity at Washington and Lee. Was that an interesting contrast for you?
It was. You know, but contrast for my father was sort of the name of the game. He didn't like the Navy. He loved the Coast Guard. I went in the Navy. he couldn't stand lawyers, I became a lawyer. You know, it's one of those father-son where you have to carve out your own direction in life. What a wonderful man. I mean, before he died, we came very close together.
So, let's see. We're going to make a big shift here. I understand that you and I have something really important in common, that Frank Parsons changed both of our lives.
Really?
Yes. Frank Parsons is an old and dear friend of mine.
He's
and
a wonderful
he helped me get this position to doing the book.
He's a wonderful man.
He is a wonderful man.
I had an ancestor of the Mayflower named Warren, Richard Warren, so we may be related, have something else in common.
We may indeed. I haven't gone that far back. So tell me how Frank Parsons changed your life.
Frank and I, number one, were classmates at Washington Lee, same class. And we had a reunion, forget which one it was. Maybe I'll have to look it up. I think 40th, whatever. And at the dinner, Dr. Turner was the one that was physically, you know, physical disability.
You got a good memory after all.
And but anyway, Dr. Turner spoke, and then Frank spoke. And he's brought us up to date on what was happening in Washington Lee, and he mentioned the Performing Arts Center, that they were hoping to raise enough money, and had raised most of the money for it, but not completed the amount needed to build it. And I mentioned to him after he'd spoken that Marguerite and I would like to learn more about the Performing Arts Center. So President Wilson and Ferris Hotchkiss made their way to Philadelphia, and we had a meeting at our law firm in Center City, Hoyle Morris and Kerr.
So John Wilson and Ferris came to see you.
Yeah, we were at the law firm, and I said, John, that we had sold part of our company, and most of the money in the sale had gone into the company, but we had some of our own, and that we would consider making a gift to Washington and Lee. But we thought the perhaps the most important would be not bricks and mortar, but to expand the journalism curriculum at Washington Lee into a full communications curriculum. And we'd add some professorships in the field of radio or television or cable, or, you know, and expand the curriculum. And the reason we did that goes back to a wonderful man who lived in Virginia, and he'd worked for DuPont when DuPont controlled General Motors. And he was sent by DuPont out to Detroit, and he formed the Frigidaire Division for General Motors. And when he died, he gave, I've forgotten, 15 to 20 million to Washington Lee, and similar amounts, maybe not as much, to other schools in Virginia. And he said, I want no bricks and mortar named after me. He said, my hope is that you will spend this money, as I recall, in not more than 10 years. And I hope that you will keep faculty compensation in mind in spending it. But entirely up to you how you spend it. Now, there was a man, in fact, there was an article in the WNL Alumni Magazine about him when he, you know, died and gave this gift to WNL. And I kept it for a long time. So I had that in mind, and I mentioned to Wilson, I didn't want my name on any building. I really wanted to help expand their curriculum in the communications area, which is where our business is. And he said, no. By this time, we were at the Garden, a restaurant, sitting down for lunch, and he said he'd thought about it, and he really wanted to complete the Performing Arts Center, and if I didn't mind, that's where our gift should go. and that the building would be named in our honor, which violated all the principles that I had going into the discussion. So I said, John, you know, why don't we just say yes to your request and let's sit down and enjoy our lunch. So John almost fell off his chair, but we had a lovely lunch and we didn't discuss it again. And the building was named for Marguerite, you know, and myself, and for which we're deeply grateful, even though it was not consistent with what our principles, you know, were. We can't say that we haven't enjoyed, you know, being part of what that building has done, you know, for the community as well as the university.
It's made a big difference.
That's what I hear.
I was at a performance last spring, and I was sitting next to a woman, total stranger. We started chatting, and she said that she just moved to Lexington fairly recently, and I said, what brought you here? And she said, this building.
Really?
She said, the things that happened in this building, there's no other small town that has this kind of quality performing arts.
Yeah.
And she's right.
No.
We're very grateful to you.
And the students like it and they participate.
Oh,
and
it's wonderful.
No matter what your major field of study is, I mean, it's part of a true liberal arts, you know, education to be able to appreciate the art. So
it really touches everyone.
We really have to pay our respects to John Wilson for his leadership in doing it.
Did you get involved with the construction? Did you go down and watch the building going up?
We saw it on several occasions, but we were smart enough not to get involved in its design. They did a fantastic job, and the people that did it are far more qualified to do it than we are.
So what did you think as you watched it going up, knowing it was Lenfest Center?
A lot of pride, really, to be part of that great project made us feel wonderful. And everybody was so kind during the course of construction and showing us around, explaining the experimental theater and, you know, all the other parts of it. And they did a great job designing it and building it. And looking back, there's hardly anything that people create that you can't say we couldn't improve on if we had to do it a second time. And I'm not as close to it as Al Gordon and others, but, you know, to my mind, it is something that if you recreate it, it'd be very close and not exactly the same.
Who was showing you around? Who was, what were those?
Al Gordon showed us around. Who's the present head of maintaining university, recently named Big Tall, Scott.
Scott Beebe.
Scott Beebe showed us around. Scott was wonderful. And the construction superintendent that was there, whose name I don't recall.
Mm-hmm. I particularly like the way the two buildings mirror each other, Gaines Hall and the Lenfest.
Yes.
It's such a lovely balance. I like standing on both corners, you know, and looking.
And it fits so well, and the way they took that old railroad bridge and made the entrance, I mean, it's so beautifully done. You know, it's not like it's separate apart from the main campus. It transcends, you know, it's just like an extension of the campus. You're right, the Gaines Hall fits in with it so nicely.
Yeah, they really, that's a whole part of the campus that probably when you were there, you never thought of it being part of the campus.
No way. No, even Gaines Hall wasn't there. In fact, there's a lot that wasn't there.
So, did you come back to a lot of reunions before this happened?
No. I believe only one before that.
And had you thought about making a major gift to Washington and Lee?
Well, I never had the money to make a major gift.
Mm-hmm.
So when you don't have the ability to do so, it's hardly in your mind. So, no, we don't have the philosophy of accumulation of wealth. We're very happy to make gifts like this in our lifetime. You know, where you can see the benefit of what you've done. It's a very gives you a very good feeling.
So, when you think about Washington and Lee, and we're heading on to the next century, and we're about to celebrate our 250th anniversary. Mm. Now, I think that's interesting. You arrived at Washington and Lee in the bicentennial year. Were you aware of that when you got there, that it was the bicentennial year?
Probably. In 49?
Uh-huh. I think the celebrations had pretty much happened before, in the spring, before
you
got
there. No, it doesn't register in my memory.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen to the people who come in 1999, too, that they won't realize that all this thing, these events have happened beforehand.
Yeah.
But you did. You came in the bicentennial year, and now we're coming up on the 250th in 1999.
Yeah. It'd be exciting. Jim Balanchine, I'm sure, will do a fantastic job. The man has boundless energy.
He is really impressive. I really enjoyed the time I've spent with him. He's a lot of fun.
He's a very impressive man.
So, what would you like to see for the future in Washington and Lee?
You're never through. You know, the needs of the university are never completely satisfied. And I would like to see it continue in its, you know, high academic stature. I'd like to see it continue its principles of integrity as, you know, manifested by the honor system. I'd like to see it continue relatively small, although I think it's probably economically more viable in the future for it to grow somewhat, but still maintain its relative small size in relation to other peer universities. I think you could find more diversity in the student body, but I don't consider that, you know, a compelling directive. Although I do think that it would help prepare the student body for life to have more diversity in the student body. And I think perhaps an expansion of international representation within the student body. That'll also require an expansion in the teaching staff and broaden the curriculum. And, you know, it's a question whether economically the school can afford it, but it would be nice that they could and did those. The diversity of student body would require more financial aid also and more endowment for that. So I fully recognize that the things I'd like to see happen will depend on economic support.
Yeah, it's interesting that the black graduates I've talked to, they say that they really could have gone anywhere. And they came to Washington and Lee because it was a challenge to come to Washington and Lee. But that anybody who's bright enough to get into Washington and Lee is bright enough to go anywhere if you're black. You know, you have an open door.
From what I've seen of the black students of Washington Lee, we should be proud of all of them, I think. And proud of Washington Lee and how they've integrated. Oh, integrated is not the word, but how they've accepted, you know, the black students and made them part of the university.
Now, a major part of diversity happened 10 years ago. How did you feel about co-education?
Oh, I'm totally in favor of it. Years ago, I was head of a teenage girls magazine called 17, and we completed probably the largest survey ever had been done with teenagers, both male and female. And it became apparent that the trend was that male and female students, I'm not talking about all, but the growing trend and became the majority, wanted to go to a co-ed university. And Washington, by going co-ed, has raised the academic standards of the school. It's reflected the desires of most young people, teenagers. And it did the right thing. And you know, those opposed to it, I think, are just plain wrong.
So when you
didn't need to add that, but it's true.
Well, when you come on campus and you see all these young ladies walking around, does it feel at all odd, considering what it was like
well,
when you were there?
Well, based on this, you know, background that I had, it's not odd at all. It's something, same thing happened in Mercersburg when I went to school, went co-ed. And it's just the changing mores and feeling of life. We're now challenging the females with the same challenge that men are. The men have, and I think, you know, this reflects the idea that we work together. We work together out in the business world. We have to work together at the college level also. It's completely natural to me.
Do you have any business interaction with graduates from Washington Lee?
Not on a regular basis. Every now and then I come across it. I mean, on graduate, the head of the book division at Time Warner is a WNL graduate. Richie, who is very heavy in the field of communications I'm in, is a WNL graduate. You know, I run across WNL graduates now and then, but I don't make a point of seeking them out. Fraternity ties have to end somewhere, and you have to go on with your life.
It's interesting to talk to various people and how some people just seem to be surrounded by nothing but Washington and Lee people. And it's interesting to me. I wonder, what about the rest of the world? Well, is there anything more you would like to say about Washington and Lee?
Everything I say would just be mirrored by everybody else. You know, to me it was one of the most gratifying experiences that I had in life. My mother was Scotch-Irish background, and the history of the school is Scotch-Irish roots. And there's a simplicity and a plainness that is still very rich about the school. We're not a Tidewater school. And it reflects my philosophy of what people should be. So it's had a good influence in my own life. When I went to Columbia Law School, the only election I ever ran for in my life, I wanted to put a honor system at Columbia Law School. And I ran for election on that platform. I got 80% of the vote, and I was class president for 2 years. And even though they elected me with that overwhelming majority, they turned down flat the honor system. They just said, a graduate of CCNY or, you know, City College in New York, he said, I'm going to let that guy take the test without anybody looking over his shoulder, make sure he doesn't cheat. He said, no way. So I got elected, but they turned down my platform. And, but perhaps that at least illustrates that I believe in the system. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mame, thank you.
This has been really wonderful. It's a treat for me to meet you.
The school has also helped me in life. You know, I think the ultimate achievement is to have respect for yourself. And I think that, that training WNL sort of follows you through. And people respect the person, you know, that learns the qualities that Washington Lee taught. It does help in business. Thanks.